A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a green planet in space. Turner. Now a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear in a gilt picture frame. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Meet Me in St. Louis. Copyright 1944 by Lowe's Incorporated, starring Judy Garland. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by John Krinke and Samantha Manahan. Read by Wendy Sacchichini. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DBS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dbs@wgbh.org. More titles, with Margaret O'Brien, Mary Astor, Lucille Bremer, Leon Ames, Tom Drake, Marjorie Main, and Harry Davenport. Screenplay by Irving Brecker and Fred F. Finkelhoff, based on the book by Sally Benson. The trolley song, The Boy Next Door, Skip to Malou, and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine. Photographed in Technicolor. Director of Photography, George Folsey, ASC. Musical adaptation, Roger Edens. Musical direction, Georgie Stoll. Orchestrations, Conrad Salinger. Cast, Judy Garland as Esther Smith. Margaret O'Brien as Tootie Smith. Mary Astor as Mrs. Anna Smith. Lucille Bremer as Rose Smith. Leon Ames as Mr. Alonzo Smith. Tom Drake as John Truett. Marjorie Main as Katie the Maid. And Harry Davenport as Grandpa. Produced by Arthur Freed. Directed by Vincent Minnelli. Now, a sepia-toned photo dated summer 1903 captures a horse-drawn wagon in front of a grand house with a mansard roof. The picture turns into color film. Trotting roan gray horses pull a beer wagon past the three-story house. In the back of the wagon, two boys wrestle on top of the barrel kegs as a bright red roadster motors past. On a bicycle up ahead, a young blonde-haired man carrying a bag of groceries pedals across the front lawn of the manor. In the kitchen, a red-haired woman leans over a steaming kettle and sips from a wooden spoon.
Best ketchup we ever made, Katie.
The maid tries it and frowns.
Too sweet.
Mr. Smith likes it on the sweet side.
All men like it on the sweet side. Too sweet, Miss Smith.
Katie adds red vinegar.
Oh.
The young blonde-haired man enters, sniffs the steaming copper kettle, and takes a sip.
Too flat.
Oh. You can always put spices, but you can't take it out. Here, this just came for you.
A package.
Did you get everything?
Everything?
Hey, it's my Princeton catalog.
I've been waiting for this.
Wait, Mama. You should have taken a swim with me.
That's all I have to do.
The dripping girl puts on men's shoes.
Don't track up the floor now.
I won't. Oh, meet me in St. Louis, Louis.
She plods upstairs.
Don't tell me the lights are shining any place but there. We will dance the hoochie-coochie. I will be your tootsie-wootsie.
She goes to open the bathroom door, then jumps back.
St. Louis.
Meet me in St. Louis, Louis. I'll be out in a minute, Agnes.
Oh, I see.
Grandpa puts away his shaving kit. He has a trim white mustache and wears a green and white striped knit beanie. Dancing out of the bathroom, he pats Agnes as she trots in.
Coochie, coochie, coochie. We'll be a tootsie wootsie.
Grandpa skips down the hall into his bedroom.
Louis, Louis, meet me in the fair. La 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 la.
Standing in front of a hat rack and a mirror, Grandpa tries on a round brimless cap. He stands tall and puffs out his chest.
La 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 la. Any place but there.
He takes off the cap and tries on a bright red fez with a black tassel. Going to the window, he watches a buggy pull up to the house.
Meet me in St. Louis, Louis. Meet me at the
A man helps a young woman down. Esther's strawberry blonde hair bounces as she runs inside and finds her mother in the kitchen.
It was hot on the tennis court.
Entirely too hot, if you ask me. Mm. Don't forget you have to wash your hair.
No, I won't. Rose is bringing the shampoo from downtown.
Esther tastes the ketchup.
Too sour?
Just what I told Katie.
Behind her mother's back, Esther asks Katie for something. Katie frowns. Under Esther's puppyish gaze, Katie softens and nods yes. Esther leaves with a smile as Katie sidles over to Mrs. Smith.
Would it start a minor revolution in this household if dinner was an hour early tonight?
Well, Mr. Smith hates to eat early on a hot day.
Eating early on a hot day gives you more time to digest your food before retiring. Besides, I'm due at my sister's house 7 o'clock on a family matter.
Something wrong with your sisters?
Having trouble with her husband. Him being a man.
Well, early dinner's all right with me, but you'll have to explain it to Mr. Smith.
Oh, he won't mind. Seeing as how tonight's corned beef night.
Katie sets the dining room table.
Is it all right, Katie?
Yes, it's all right, but I had to tell your poor mother another flock of lies.
Well, Katie, they're only white lies.
A lie's lie, and dressed in white don't help it. Now, if it's not asking to... Just why was I lying this time? Why must we have dinner an hour early?
Because Rose is expecting...
Now, don't go blame your sister.
Blaming her? We're doing this for her. You know Rose's problem. Warren Sheffield's been writing to her for 6 months without one word that even smells like a proposal.
What's that got to do with having dinner an hour early?
Warren Sheffield is telephoning Rose long distance at 6:30.
Long distance?
Yes, from New York City. And if the whole family's sitting here in the room, she may be loath to say the things a girl's compelled to say to get a proposal out of a man. If the man, unfortunately, is Warren Sheffield.
Personally, I wouldn't marry a man who proposed to me over an invention.
Well, we can't be too particular. Although we love Rose, the brutal fact is that, well, she isn't getting any younger.
Hello, Rose.
There's the poor old maid now.
Rose, in her 20s, strolls up the front walk with a coy smile. She stops halfway to pick idly at a shrub. Next door, an athletic young man smoking a pipe stares at her. She has long red hair swept under a straw hat, ivory skin, and a high-collared blouse and a skirt over her shapely figure. With a glance in his direction, she saunters inside.
Esther! He's out there.
John Kelly?
On the porch.
Ellie, Vu.
Now be perfectly calm. We have the perfect right to sit on our own front porch.
They quickly primp their hair, then float onto the porch.
Isn't it a lovely day, Esther dear? Heavenly, Rose, simply heavenly.
They pose on the railing, then glance over. On the lawn next door, John Truett is busy caring for his pipe. Esther feigns interest in a flower as she gazes at the handsome young man, who wears white trousers and a varsity sweater. He tosses a stone away and heads inside.
Well, it's not very neighborly, I must say.
Rose holds a small package.
After all, he's only lived here 3 weeks. You can't expect him to fling himself at you.
Well, that's true. Besides, meeting him across the lawn for the first time would be so ordinary. I don't want to be just introduced to him. I want it to be something strange and wonderful, something I'll always remember.
I'll get George Briggs to bring him to Lon's going away party on Saturday.
Could you?
Rose, Esther, the water's hot. If you're going to wash your hair, you better do it now. We're eating early, you know.
All right, Mother. Yes, why are we eating early?
Well, you certainly don't want the whole family sitting in there drinking in every word while a man proposes to you long distance.
Proposes? I don't see why you assume Warren is going to propose to me.
Well, why else do you think he's calling you long distance? Do you know what it costs?
I'm not even sure I'll be in. My dear, when you get to be my age, you'll find out there are more important things in life than boys.
Rose turns on her heel and trots upstairs. Esther stands thinking a moment. Then her gaze drifts toward a window overlooking the Truetts. She sighs.
The moment I saw him smile, I knew he was just my style. My only regret is we've never met, though I dream of him all the while. But he doesn't know I exist. No matter how I may persist. So it's clear to see there's no hope for me. Though I live at 5135 Kensington Avenue, and he lives at 5133. How can I ignore the boy next door I love? to please me, doesn't even tease me, and he never sees me glance his way. And though I'm heart sore, the boy next door affection for me won't display. I just adore him, so I can't ignore him, the boy next door.
Esther gets up and checks herself in a tall gilt-framed mirror. She wears a blue and white candy-striped dress with a white bow tied at her neck and a cinched white belt around her slender waist. She throws a strand of hair off her shoulder, turns this way and that, then holds her long hair back and smiles. With breezy spins, she waltzes herself across the foyer, then stops short as she catches sight of the Truett home again. Now in the kitchen. As Katie ladles the ketchup into bottles, the fez-adorned grandpa tastes the batch. Katie and Mrs. Smith wait for his reaction.
Too sweet? Too sour?
He takes another taste.
Too thick.
Oh, Grandpa!
Agnes comes in.
Katie, where's my cat? Where is she?
I don't know. A while back she got in the way and I kept her down the cellar steps. I could hear her spine hit on every step.
Oh, if you've killed her, I'll kill you. I'll stab you to death in your sleep, and then I'll tie your body to two wild horses till you're pulled apart.
Oh, won't that be terrible now? There's your cat.
Oh, poor Lady Babby.
Agnes, don't go away. We're eating early, you know.
Huh? Oh, I can't get hungry till it gets dark.
Dinner's at 5:30. You can eat blindfolded.
We have to be out of the dining room by 6:30. Warren Sheffield is telephoning Rose long distance from New York.
Rose glances at Katie.
And, Rose, if I were you, I wouldn't commit myself one way or another. After
Mother,
all...
Mother, for goodness sake.
After all, we know very little about him. Why, we haven't even met his folks.
It seems to me that one little phone call is causing an awful lot of excitement in this family.
Besides, you're entirely too young. I don't think your father would allow it.
Miss Smith, if I have to keep lying to your daughters, I'll have to have more money.
Now, remember, you two, not a word of this to Papa. You know how he plagues the girls about their beaux.
Everybody knows but Papa?
Your Papa's not supposed to know. It's enough that we're letting him work hard every day to support the whole flock of us. He can't have everything.
Esther comes in from the dining room.
Mama, where's Tootie? I haven't seen her all day today.
Agnes, did Tootie come home with you?
No, Mama.
Oh, I suppose she's working on the ice wagon.
Right here's the corner.
A little girl rides in the back of an ice wagon, sucking on a hunk of ice.
Hold fast, Marv. Who gets ice now, Mr. Mealy?
Oh, Mr. Mealy.
Who gets ice now, Mr. Mealy?
No one, Tootie. Robin just can't seem to remember that Mrs. Wilkins has moved.
Now you get out of there.
Tootie grabs a doll.
Oh, Margaretha. Never seen her look so pale.
The sun ought to do her some good.
I expect she won't live through the night. She has four fatal diseases.
And it only takes one.
But she's going to have a beautiful funeral. And a cigar box my papa gave me. All wrapped in silver paper.
That's the way to go if you have to go.
Oh, she has to go. Mr. Mealy, is Robin a girl horse or a boy horse?
Girl.
How old is she?
Four.
She's awful big before. I'm five. Is she strong?
Strongest ice horse in St. Louis.
Excuse me, Mr. Neely, but it's pronounced St. Louis.
Is it now? I got a cousin spells it the same way, and we call him Louis.
He's not a city, though, is he?
No.
Is he a saint?
No.
Then there's no comparison.
Well, anyway, she's a grand old town.
It isn't a town, Mr. Neely. It's a city. It's the only city that has a World's Fair. My favorite. Wasn't I lucky to be born in my favorite city?
Now, Rose accompanies Esther.
Meet me in St. Louis, Louis. Meet me at the fair. Don't tell me the lights are shining any place but there. We will dance the hoochie-coochie. You will be my tootsie-whoopsie if you will meet me in St. Louis, Louis.
Outside, Mr. Smith trudges up the front walk. He stops, listens, and sighs heavily. Quickening his pace, he strides in the front door and over to his daughters at the piano.
For heaven's sake, stop that screeching.
We're sorry, Papa.
He drops into a chair.
That song. The fair won't open for 7 months. That's all everybody sings about or talks about. I wish everybody would meet at the fair and leave me alone.
Hello, dearest. Did you have a nice day?
I lost the case.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And you were so sure you'd win it.
I overlooked one thing. That judge is an old thief.
Well, Papa, if losing a case depresses you so, why don't you quit practicing law and go into another line of business?
That's a good idea. Beginning tomorrow, I intend to play first base for the Baltimore Orioles. Sorry, Anna, if I was a little bombastic.
That's all right, dear. You'll feel better as soon as you have your dinner.
I suppose so. But right now, I'm going to soak in that cool bathtub for one solid hour.
But that's impossible. Dinner's being served in 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
He checks his pocket watch.
It's 25:25, not 6:25.
Alonzo, we're planning on eating an hour earlier tonight.
The plans have just been changed. I'm taking a bath.
We're eating early for Katie's sake. She wants to go over there as soon as we finish. Her sister's fighting with her husband.
I see. And I suppose they'll stop fighting if I don't take a bath.
Oh, Papa. Katie's been with us for 10 years. She never asks favors. We don't want to risk losing her.
No, nowadays you can't get a maid for less than $12 a month.
Lon, count three.
One, two, three. I don't care if we have to pay a maid $15 a month. Dinner will be at 6:30. And if Katie wants to hand in a notice, she can reach me in the bathtub.
He marches upstairs. Later at dinner, Mrs. Smith pours milk for Tootie, then helps her lay her napkin in her lap.
It's way after 6:30 and Warren hasn't called yet.
Maybe he got himself another girl.
Quiet, you two.
Mom, I assure you I'm not the slightest bit sensitive about Warren Sheffield.
The Queen has spoken.
I suppose Warren's too young, too. Every fellow I introduce her to is too young.
Now listen, your father will be down in a minute, and if we all eat quickly, we may still get him out of here before the call comes through.
Warren is just 21, and I think that's a perfect age.
Practically a child.
Your father was 20 when we were married.
We gave him a bachelor dinner the night before. He almost missed the wedding. The Lord and Master.
Tootie shrinks in her chair.
Now I remember where I left my other skate.
Mr. Smith strides downstairs. Rubbing his backside, he hides the skate behind his back and enters the dining room with a frown.
I hope I haven't held you up. I was just taking a little ride before dinner.
Hello, Papa. I buried Maud Rockefeller today. You missed all the fun.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I've had a pretty full day. Tootie, remind me to spank you right after dinner.
Okay, Papa.
Lord, we thank you for the bountiful blessings which we're about to receive. Amen.
Katie comes in with a soup tureen. She serves Mr. Smith first, then goes around the table to Tootie, Agnes, Grandpa, Mrs. Smith, Rose, Esther, and the son, Alonzo Jr.
If I forget to remind Papa, you remind me.
All right.
Katie, this is delicious.
He smiles at his family.
Well, I guess this hasn't been exactly a red-letter day for any of us. Now suppose we all relax and enjoy a nice, leisurely meal.
The women stiffen.
Katie, I'm sorry I couldn't eat an hour early.
Don't blame me if the corned beef's an hour tougher.
You finished already, Tootie? That's the way I like to see you eat. You'll be a big girl.
Katie takes his bowl.
Either I've lost some soup or I've found a spoon. Oh, Katie.
Lonnie, did you have a nice day at the office? Oh, no, you didn't, did you, dear?
Oh, Katie.
Rose, did you hear that they're having a fashion pavilion at the World's Fair? Isn't that exciting?
I think we have to wait 3 months for it.
Slamming down his spoon, Mr. Smith stands up to say something.
Anybody want dessert?
Dessert? What happened to dinner?
I didn't think anybody could eat meat on a hot day like this.
Well, I'm not hot. I just had a nice cool bath, which nobody can take away from me, and I have every intention of eating an enormous dinner.
He sits back down.
Anna, I think Katie's getting a little old. Her mental processes baffle me.
As Esther tries to reply, Katie comes in bearing a platter.
Ah, corned beef and cabbage. You know, Katie, I can smell that cabbage when I get off the trolley.
Cabbage is a cabbage smell.
With a serving fork, he picks through the thin morsels of meat.
Katie, in this house, we cut the corned beef. We don't shave it. Where's the knife?
Miss Smith, you said you wanted to make this go for two meals.
Katie.
He points to the table, and she sets the platter down. Reluctantly, she hands over the carving knife. The women jump in their seats.
I'll take it.
He strides over to the wall phone.
Hello. What? Speak louder, please. New York? No, I'm not calling New York. Hello. Hello.
He hangs up.
I'm going to have that phone taken out.
Alonzo.
Yes, Anna?
Every telephone call isn't for you.
Huh. Rose dabs her tears.
That one wasn't. Those operators. Katie, take this out in the kitchen and slice it.
Rose is crying.
What's the matter with you?
Esther chimes in.
Oh, nothing, Papa. You've just ruined Rose's chance to get married, that's all.
What?
That was Warren Sheffield calling long distance to propose.
He gets up and looks out the window. Hands behind his back, he returns.
Tootie, did you know there was a long-distance phone call coming to this house?
The Iceman saw a drinker get shot yesterday, and the blood spurted out 3 feet.
Answer yes or no.
Yes, sir.
Agnes? Lon?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's just fine. Anna, I'm curious. Just when was I voted out of this family?
Oh, Lon, really, no.
Well, what else am I to think? My eldest daughter is practically on her honeymoon, and everybody in St. Louis knows about it but me.
He almost bumps into Katie, who's eavesdropping. She retreats.
In view of the fact that this family refuses to let me in on their little intrigues, I'll handle the telephone in my own way. From now on, I'll take all incoming calls. Rose, you answer that.
Thank you, Papa.
She hurries to the phone.
Hello?
Yes, this is Miss Rose Smith. Yes, you may put that New York call on.
Mrs. Smith and Esther smile.
Hello, Warren? Yes, I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Rose. How's St. Louis?
What did you say?
I said, how's St. Louis?
Oh, St. Louis is fine.
Is it hot there?
Yes, it's very hot. It's as hot as July.
Is it hot there?
Yes, it's hot here, too. I'm calling from a booth in the Hotel Delmonico. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
From the kitchen, Katie opens the dumbwaiter door and listens in.
What did you say, Warren?
Nothing. I was waiting for you to talk.
Oh. Well, did you want to discuss anything in particular?
What?
I said, was there anything special you wanted to ask me?
I can't hear you, Rose.
That's funny. I can hear you plainly.
Isn't this great? Here I am in New York, and there you are in St. Louis, and it's just like you're in the next room.
What was that?
I said it's just like you're in the next room.
Say, Rose, I hope you won't misunderstand what I'm going to say.
Yes?
I don't think you better mention this call to anyone.
Why not?
Because it'd be H to pay if my family ever found out I called long distance.
What did you say?
He said there'd be H.
If my family ever found out I called long distance.
That's strange. My family are all home and they don't think anything of it. Well, I better not waste any more of your time and money.
Wait a minute, Rose. We still got 36 seconds.
I have an engagement. I think I can hear Joe's voice now.
Good evening, Joe.
I was going to write you tonight.
Yes, you can write to me tonight if you want.
I'll write you right after I hang up.
Yes, do that little thing.
Reluctantly, she hangs up. As she composes herself, the rest of the family quickly return their attention to the table. Rose sits back down while everyone else fidgets. Mr. Smith picks up a big stalk of celery. They all turn to him.
You know, the gentleman in court...
I beg your pardon, I didn't know you.
Well, I'll bet there isn't another girl in St. Louis who's had a Yale man call her long distance just to inquire about her health.
Well, I should say not.
Katie brings back the platter of corned beef, and Rose breaks into a smile amid the attention.
Oh, a slice of corned beef. Well, I thought you were mad at me.
Oh, I can't be mad at you, Mr. Smith.
Now a letter fills our view. My dear Mr. Truett, you are cordially invited to a party on Saturday next in honor of our brother, Alonzo, who is leaving for Princeton. Hoping you will honor us, I am cordially yours, Rose Smith.
Eth is here.
What did he say?
Nothing concrete, but his voice is wonderful.
The sisters preen in a mirror.
It would have been nice if I could have been a brunette.
Yes, you should have been a brunette. Then nothing could have stopped us. Just think how we look going out together. You with your raven black hair and me with my auburn. Rose, I've decided something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let John Truett kiss me tonight.
Esther Smith!
Well, if we're going to get married, I may as well start it.
Nice girls don't let men kiss them until after they're engaged. Men don't want the bloom rubbed off.
Personally, I think I have too much bloom. Maybe that's the trouble with men.
Rose leaves. Esther pinches her cheeks and throws on an over-the-shoulder smile, which sags. She dashes out and scurries to the top of the stairs. Staring down into the party, she slows, gathers her skirt, and descends. She wears a sky blue dress with cascading layers trimmed in tassels, and a yellow scarf hangs from her white collar. She stops on the landing and spots the dapper John Truett, who wears a blue suit and a bow tie and chats with her brother. Taking a deep breath, Esther steps into the party and smiles at friends.
It's been ages, and you brought your violin.
She discreetly backs up toward John Truett.
Yes, sir, Princeton's a peach of a school.
A peach of a school?
Oh, S.
Yes, Alonzo.
May I present our neighbor, John Truett?
I didn't quite catch the name.
John Truett.
Well, welcome to our home, Mr. Truett.
Well, thank you. You know, this is the first time I've been to a party since we moved to St. Louis.
Oh, do you live here?
He lives next door.
Oh, well, that's where I've seen you.
She leads him away past her smirking brother. Partygoers fill the porch. Gals wearing lacy dresses in pastel colors, and fellows sporting tan slacks, dark blazers with crisply folded handkerchiefs in the top pockets, and smart bow ties. In the living room, a blonde gal in a blue dress plays the cornet. Alonzo Jr. takes her cornet and gives her a plate of cake. She fusses over her instrument, then Alonzo tosses it safely to a friend and starts to play a mandolin. Another gal plays the violin beside a fellow at the piano.
Skip, skip, skip to Malou. Skip, skip, skip to Malou. Skip, skip, skip to Malou.
Esther joins him.
put on your Sunday go-to meet, and I'll take you by the hand. If you will be my dancing partner, we will dance to beat the band. So join the promenade and lead the big parade. And if you don't get home at all, your paw will understand.
Everyone pairs off.
So choose partner, skip to Maloo. Choose partner, skip to Maloo. Choose partner, skip to Maloo. Skip to Maloo, my darling.
Rose swishes her skirt.
Flies in the buttermilk, shoo, shoo, shoo. Flies in the buttermilk, shoo, shoo, shoo. Flies in the buttermilk, shoo, shoo, shoo. Skip to Maloo, my darling.
They form dancing lines.
I'll be glad to go with you, so pretty, do not tarry. But if I
the girls chain through the boys.
You, so let me dance with Harry.
Skip to Maloo.
Charlie.
Skip to Maloo.
Charlie.
Skip to Maloo.
Skip to Maloo, my darling.
The gals twirl out to meet the fellows. Then they pair up for a spin.
Skip to Maloo, skip to Maloo.
Corner boy, buckwing, corner girl.
Rose and a boy slap their heels as they do-si-do.
Ida Booten to the center of the world.
Ida, the cornet player, bashfully flees.
Everybody dance!
They pair off. John Truett wanders around alone.
Lost my partner. Lost my partner. Lost my partner.
Skip!
Skip to Maloo, my darling.
Rose smiles coyly.
I'll find another one prettier than you. I'll find another one prettier than you. I'll find another one prettier than you. And go to another party.
Esther.
Oh, I'll fly away to a neighboring state. I don't care what my friends say. We'll dance and sing till broad daylight. I won't get home till Wednesday.
In their nightgowns, Agnes and Tootie hide on the stairs and watch the couple spin. Ida tries to lean on her partner and falls. Alonzo and John help her up. As Ida laughs it off with Rose, Esther, and Alonzo, John spots the little girls on the staircase.
Miss Esther, there are mice in the house. Two of them.
Tootie and Agnes.
With long faces, the white-gowned girls come down.
Why aren't you two asleep?
There was too much noise down here.
I want to sing, too.
One song. All right, Rose?
Well, if they promise to go right up.
Come on.
Esther scoops up Tootie and carries her across the room.
Come on, Lon.
She puts her in Alonzo's lap.
All right, Agnes, that's enough, bud.
Tootie really sings quite well for a child. What would you like to sing, dear? Babies, boats, a silver moon, or did you ever see a rabbit climb a tree?
No, I hate those songs. I want to sing a new one. It goes, I was last night, dear mother.
Well, you can't sing that.
Oh, do let her. She's such a sweet little thing.
Sweet? She's a hoodlum.
Oh, come on, let it. Well, all right. Go on.
Tootie stands and sways.
I was drunk last night, dear mother. I was drunk the night before. But if you'll forgive me, mother, I'll never get drunk anymore.
Tootie, you're a very bad girl. It's really Lon's fault. He teaches her those things.
I can do the cakewalk if Esther does it with me.
No.
Oh, come on.
Esther takes Tootie's hand and leads her to a pile of the fellow's straw boater hats. Tootie tries one on.
Yes, I know. Well, here, try this one. Now, put him on the chair.
Rose sits at the piano.
A verse and two chords. Oh, Es, want an introduction? Yes, well, all right.
Tootie and Esther put the two hats and two canes they've picked out on a chair, bicker for a moment, then hide behind the sides of the dining room entranceway.
Now.
With their arms folded across their chests, they prance ceremonially into the living room and circle each other. Esther quickly ushers Tootie into position, and they swish their skirts from side to side.
Down in the jungles lived a maid, of royal blood, though dusky shade.
A marked impression one she made upon a Zulu
from Madame Bulu.
And every morning he would be down underneath the bamboo tree.
waiting there his love to see.
And then to her sing.
To her he'd sing.
Vamp.
They prance in a quick circle.
If you like me like I like you, and we like both the same, I like to say this very day, I like to change your name. 'Cause I love you and love you true, and if you love me, one live is two, two live is one, under the bamboo tree.
They grab hat and cane. Holding their boaters high, they tuck the canes under their arms and high kick across the room. They saunter forward, then slide smoothly back, one foot at a time. Tootie smiles impishly. Waving their hats, they kick out of the room. They reappear for a bow. Later, the guests depart. Alonzo finds Rose.
Rose, I'm going to walk to your room.
Oh, thank you.
As they leave, John Truett wanders past Rose.
Thank you.
I can't find my hat anywhere, darn it. Oh, pardon the expression.
Your hat? Why, I put it here with the others when you came in. Oh, Ed, have you seen Mr. Truett Chapeau?
Hmm? Well, it seems I saw it somewhere.
Excuse me, just a minute.
She disappears around a corner. In the kitchen, she opens the bread box and takes out his hat. Pausing to peel a piece of raisin bread off of it, she returns.
I'm sorry to detain you. It was right where I left it.
Thank you. Good night, Miss Rose.
Good night, Mr. Truett.
Good night, Miss Esther.
Good night.
And thank you for your neighborly hospitality.
He frowns at his hat.
Raisins? I wonder how those got there.
That's funny, isn't it? Bonsoir, Mr. Truett. Coming up, S?
Presently. After all, someone has to show our guest to the door.
Remember, S, dear, you have to get your beauty sleep.
Rose glances sharply at Esther, then retires upstairs.
Well, I guess I'd better get going.
You haven't very far to go.
No, I haven't at that, have I? Well, good night.
Good night. We'll be seeing some more of you, won't we?
Oh, you bet.
You'll be joining the crowd Friday when we go to the fairgrounds, won't you?
Well, that is if basketball practice doesn't run too late.
Yes.
Well, good night.
Good night.
That Welch rabbit was ginger peachy. Good night.
Good night.
They shake hands, then John walks out.
Mr. Truett.
Yes, Miss Esther?
This is an untoward request, but would you mind accompanying me through the house while I turn out the lights?
Well, I...
It's just that I'm afraid of mice.
Well, sure. That's the least a man can do for his charming hostess.
I have to turn them out everywhere. In the dining room and in the living room and everywhere.
They share a bashful smile. Then Esther leads him back into the living room, where she turns off a light switch. Six bulbs darken in an ornate chandelier. Atop the golden fixture, six more gas flames burn on faux candlesticks.
Would you?
Sure.
She hands him a metal rod. Standing close behind her, he reaches it out toward the chandelier.
Now it's here.
She touches his wrist and guides him. As he turns off the gas valve, he stares down at her hand.
Well, certainly is dark in here with the lights off.
It certainly is. Shall we do the dining room next?
Yes.
He stares at her long auburn hair and follows her into the dining room, absently gazing at her smooth face as she turns. She nods and turns his attention to the chandelier's frosted glass lights. He turns them off one at a time. Esther gazes calmly at the table. John glances down at her, then turns the rest off by hand. The room grows dark. As he reaches for the last light, his arm brushes her shoulder. He finds his arm coming down around her waist. He leans close.
Say, that is nice perfume.
Do you like it?
Uh-huh.
It's essence of violet. I save it for special occasions.
Exactly the kind my grandmother uses.
Esther blinks crestfallen, then regains her smile and shows John into the hallway. He follows attentively at her side. They stop under the chandelier in the foyer. John looks up at the six gas lights and positions the wand under one of them. Esther steals a glance at him, then takes his wrist. She guides his hand to the central shutoff knob. The foyer darkens.
There.
I'll just turn these last two out.
Hadn't you better leave those lights on for your folks?
I'll just turn them down dim.
John tugs on his starched collar as Esther climbs the steps to the landing and turns down a pair of wall sconces. Their flames flicker with wispy black smoke, then burn with a faint light. Esther leans against the banister. John stares in awe at her fine, tender features and rouged lips.
Gosh, Miss Esther. I hope I'm not too presumptuous. Well, you don't need any beauty sleep.
What a nice compliment.
How does it go?
How does what go?
Over the banister leans a face, tenderly sweet. And
beguiling, while below her with tender grace, he watches the picture, smiling. A light burns dim in the hall below. Nobody sees them standing, saying good night again, soft and low. Halfway up to the landing, nobody, only those eyes of brown, tender and full of meaning, gaze on the loveliest face in time.
That's beautiful, Miss Esther.
You can drop them, miss.
He shakes her hand heartily.
This has been a great evening. Really, it has. I'll never forget it, Esther.
Do you mean that?
Yes, I do. And you know something else?
What?
You've got a mighty strong grip for a girl.
She gapes as he heads out the door.
Good night, Esther.
Good night, neighbor.
She glances at her hand with a sour face. Gathering her skirt, she trots back up the stairs, turns the wall lights all the way up, and heads for bed. Daytime. A conductor on a double-decker trolley readies for a trip. He stands on the upper deck, glaring at a group of boys. Nearby, Esther waits to board with a group of friends.
It's going to be the biggest fair ever held in this country. My father was talking to the World's Fair Commission yesterday, and they estimate it's going to cost a cool $50 million. That's a lot of kale.
Oh, I can hardly wait to see what they've done to Skinker Swamp.
Yes, it must look like a fairyland.
Oh, no, wait, not quite. It's still a little rough. After all, the exposition doesn't open for 6 months. Well, here we go. All aboard, everybody.
Esther lags behind, searching everywhere as her friends line up to board. She wears a close-fitting black velvet top with a blue plaid skirt.
Are we all here?
Oh, just too bad for those that aren't. Time, tide, and trolley wait for no man. Let her go, motorman.
Esther climbs on and peers out the back as the trolley rolls away. The rest of the gang crowds the motorman at the front. One boy grabs the bell rope.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings as we started for Huntington Dell.
Esther reluctantly turns away.
Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Thump, thump, thump went the brake. Thump, thump, thump went my heartstrings as we glided for Huntington Dell.
Esther goes upstairs.
The day was bright, the air was sweet. The smell of honeysuckle charmed me off my feet. I tried to sing, but couldn't squeak. In fact, I felt so good I couldn't even speak.
She slouches into a seat near the front.
Buzz, buzz, with the buzzer. Time to all this and more. Time to fall with my heartstrings as we got off that Huntington Park.
Esther looks over the side and breaks into a wide grin. Behind the trolley, John holds onto his hat and sprints to catch hold of the back. Esther swings around.
With my high starch collar and my high top shoes and my hair piled high up on my head, I went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley and lost my heart instead. With this light brown derby and this bright green tie, he was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yen, so I counted to ten, then I counted to ten again.
She whispers with her girlfriends.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings. From the moment I saw him, I fell. Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Bump, bump, bump went the brake. Thump, thump, thump went my heartstrings. When he smiled, I could feel the car shake. He tipped his hat and took a seat. He said he hoped he hadn't stepped upon my feet. He asked my name, I held my breath. I couldn't speak because he scared me half to death.
Hiya, Johnny.
Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Pop, pop, pop went the wheels. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As he started to go, then I started to know how it feels. When the universe reels.
The day was bright, the air was sweet. The smell of honeysuckle charmed you off your feet. You tried to sing, but couldn't squeak.
In fact, you loved him so you couldn't even speak.
Buzz, buzz, buzz went the buzzer. Pop, pop, pop went the wheels. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As he started to leave, I took hold of his sleeve with my hand.
John slips in beside her without her seeing.
It were planned. He stayed on with me, and it was grand just to stand with his hand holding mine to the end of the line.
She looks over her shoulder and sees John. Her smile falls for a moment. John grins. She smiles back, looks awkwardly away, then sits tensely beside him as her friends look on, laughing. The scene changes to a photo of the Smiths' grand house, surrounded by a photo mat painted with mums, harvest grapes, and fall leaves. A title reads, Autumn, 1903. The house comes to life as our view closes in on an upstairs window. At night, Rose burns a cork over a candle flame, then rubs the black charcoal on Agnes and Tootie, who wear costumes of old clothes. Agnes looks like an old lady, Tootie an old man.
Now, you be careful tonight, and don't run over Mrs. Truett's lawn. It's just been planted.
We won't. She's nice. But wait till you see what we do to Mr. Browcoff. That'll be a caution, won't it, Tootie?
We'll fix him fine. It'll serve him right for poisoning cats.
Does he poison cats?
He buys meat, and then he buys poisoned, and then he puts them all together.
And then he burns the cats at midnight in his furnace. You can smell the smoke. That's horrible. Are you sure?
Johnny Tevis smelled the smoke and peeked in through the window.
and there was a box of dead cats.
And Mr. Brockhoff was beating his wife with a red-hot poker.
I never would have believed it. He looks like such a quiet man.
And you know something else?
Don't tell. You crossed your heart, you wouldn't tell.
I crossed it with my left hand. Mr. Brockhoff has empty whiskey bottles in his cellar.
In the kitchen, the girls sneak up behind Katie. Agnes wears a skull mask. Tootie wears a long nose with spectacles and a mustache.
Sniff! Who are these boys?
It's me, Katie. It's Agnes.
Oh, the saints preserve us, it is. You had me fooled.
Mama, we fooled her.
Well, if you can fool Katie, you can fool anyone.
I'll answer it, Mama.
Agnes, I thought you were a drunken ghost.
But I am. She's a horrible ghost, and I'm a terrible drunken ghost.
She was murdered in a den of thieves, and I died of her broken heart. I've never even been buried because everyone's so scared to come near me.
What's that?
Grandpa comes in with two paper bags.
Here's the flower.
Did anyone hear a moan just then?
I did.
Did it go like this? Oh.
Uh-huh.
I didn't hear it.
Now, children, when people answer the doorbells, don't throw too much flour.
Just a small handful right in their face.
Mama, that was Mrs. Wilkins. She said she'd leave her hammock all folded on the porch, and will the children please bring it back when they're through stealing it?
See that you do, and get back early, or no ice cream.
All right, Mommy. Come on, Tootie.
You couldn't catch me out on a night like this for $1,000,000.
Agnes and Tootie stare wide-eyed.
We'll show them.
If you wet the flour before you throw it, it makes it harder for the victim to get it off.
Agnes nods and stares into the dark night. Taking Tootie by the hand, she leads her reluctantly out the back door. Clutching their bags of flour, they creep along the side of the house, then look out into the street, where a dozen kids in costumes throw old chairs and picture frames onto a bonfire. A group of kids heads off, then comes to a dead stop. They come face to face with two newcomers and back slowly away. Agnes, with her lady's hat and skeleton mask on, walks into the light of the fire with Tootie, who gapes fearfully behind her long nose and spectacles. A few of the tough older boys lower their masks. Their leader glares.
Who's that?
It's me,
Agnes. And who's that?
That's Tootie.
She lowers her nose.
Look at Tootie!
No.
All right, you go with them. They're taking the rocket.
No, we're taking the Mitchells.
All right, get the Mitchells, but pull down their fence and kill them all. All right,
Agnes pulls Tootie aside.
You stay here, Tootie, and don't go too near the fire.
Agnes hurries away. Tootie runs over to two boys carrying a wagon wheel. They toss it onto the fire.
Oh, let me help!
Get out of the way!
Let me help! Let me help!
Johnny! Hey, Johnny! Just killed 8 more people! Make them so!
We tortured them! Hurt the soles of their feet!
That's fine. Now go get the Brockers.
Oh, no, we're gonna get the Ferrises.
Yeah, the Ferrises! All right, then the Ferrises! Pull down their house, roof and all!
Oh, yeah! Come on!
No, no, Tootie, you stay here. You're too little!
Ah, why don't you go home?
Boy chucks a box onto the fire.
Somebody's gonna take the Brockhoff!
I'll take him! I'll take him!
I'll take the
Brockhoff! Yeah, let Tootie take him!
No, don't let Tootie take him! The Brockhoff's of a fierce bulldog! She'll be torn to pieces!
Yeah, Tootie, you better go home. You're too small.
I am not. I won't go home. I'll take the Brockhoff.
All right. Tootie takes the Brockhoff. But remember, if you don't hit Mr. Brockhoff in the face with flour and say I hate you, the banshees will haunt you forever. Give her some flour.
No, I got my own flour.
Tootie clutches the bag to her chest and walks away. The big kids watch her step slowly down the wide, deserted street. Wearing a man's felt derby and tattered overcoat, Tootie wipes her long, fake nose, then pulls down her spectacles. Dirt smudges her face like a scruffy beard. Behind her, the other kids throw more stuff on the blazing bonfire. Blowing dust and dead leaves swirl around Tootie. Her wide, frightened eyes swivel around the darkness as her shoulders rise and fall with jittery breaths. Long shadows stretch across the street. As Tootie passes a buggy with big spoked wheels and a leather seat, the draft horse swings its head toward her. Gaping, Tootie shuffles on. Her restless eyes scan the night, then freeze wide open. A tall, square house looms before her. The windows glow a dim yellow. Tootie takes a few cautious steps closer, then runs across the lawn and hides behind a porch pillar. She puts her spectacles and pointy mustached nose back on, then climbs onto the porch, careful not to trip over her baggy clothes. Clutching her paper bag, she tiptoes across the dark porch and kneels by a window. Inside, she glimpses a prim woman sitting rigidly in a chair, and a man with coarse features and a frizzy goatee reading a paper. Nearby, a bulldog with a studded collar licks its lips. Tootie trembles. Carefully, she gets up and walks away from the window. Her mouth hangs open. She hesitates, then stuffs her hand into her bag for a handful of flour. She strides boldly up to the front door and cranks the doorbell. Tootie takes a few steps back, and the coarse-featured man with the frizzy goatee opens the door. His stocky bulldog glares out. Tootie gapes up at the man's stern face.
Well?
I hate you, Mr. Brocco.
She throws flour in his face. Tootie runs off. Dusted in flour, Mr. Brokoff wipes his face. As the bulldog licks flour off the floor, Mr. Brokoff pulls it inside. In a frantic, arm-flailing run, Tootie races across the lawn into the street. Flapping her oversized sleeve, she gasps for air. Agnes suddenly grabs her sister and pulls her to the curb.
Tootie! Tootie, what have you been doing?
She took the Brokoff.
All alone?
Yeah. What's the matter, Tootie? Did the bulldog try to bite you?
Did Mr. Brokoff chase you? Tootie, can't you talk?
I killed him!
She killed him all alone. Hey, wait a minute. Listen. Listen. Quiet, quiet. Tootie killed the Brokoff single-handed. She's the bravest of them all.
Yeah, Tootie's the most horrible.
Yeah!
Laura Smith, you're free. Your fancy is thin. Here, throw that on the fire.
I'm the most horrible. I'm the most horrible.
Tootie heaves a broken chair onto the bonfire. Joining the big kid, she piles scraps onto the blaze. Now two Dalmatians chase a buggy drawn by a sleek black horse. Rose sits beside the driver, a handsome mustached gentleman.
Thank you for dropping me off, Colonel Darley.
It was my pleasure, Miss Smith.
She smiles sweetly. He climbs out and lends her a hand down.
I'm sure the ice cream would have been melted if it weren't for your thoughtfulness.
Glad to be of service. Good night.
Would you like to come in? There's plenty of ice cream, and I know my folks would love to meet you.
Thank you, but some other time, perhaps. Oh, give my regards to Tootie. Oh,
thank you. She's such a share all folk.
Yes, she certainly is. Good evening.
He tips his hat, then taps the reins and drives off. Rose gazes after him as she walks toward the house. Waiting on the porch, Esther eagerly meets her sister.
Rose, him!
Oh, Esther's simply enchanting. And so mature.
Well, how did it happen? Where did you meet?
I was coming out of Hunsinger's and he was coming in. I bumped into him.
Well, accidentally?
Almost.
Oh, Rose, I think that's the most exciting.
Tootie, where is she? I thought I heard the trolley when...
Esther dashes around the house.
Tootie!
Inside, Grandpa hurries downstairs.
Yes, it's Tootie!
Tootie!
They all run outside. Esther carries Tootie across the lawn and up the front steps.
Oh,
Oh, God.
Here, somebody telephone the doctor.
If you can't get Dr. Gerard, get Dr. Brown. Katie, get some hot water.
Yes, yes. I know, Jarvis.
Mrs. Smith carries her daughter inside. Later, Tootie lies on a chaise longue.
To kill me.
Mama, I think it's your lip. Let me see, honey. No, Mother won't hurt her baby. Let me see, dear. Let me see. She's lost a tooth.
That doctor must be walking.
Shall I call Papa at the office?
Oh, good heavens, no. Don't call your father. What could he do?
There, darling.
He tried to kill me.
Now tell Mama, what happened?
It was a streetcar. I think it hit her. It must have tossed her onto the cinders, didn't it, Tootie?
No, it wasn't the streetcar. It was John Truett.
Esther gapes.
You tried to kill me.
John Truett.
John Truett hit you?
He tried to kill me. And when I screamed, he ran away.
Tootie Smith, that's a monstrous falsehood. John Truett wouldn't hit a girl, least of all my sister.
Mrs. Smith wipes dirt off Tootie's face. Rose lets the doctor in.
May I have your coat, Doctor? Well, Tootie, what is it this time?
John threw
a hitter,
Dr. Gerard.
Well, let's have a look.
The thin mustached doctor sits beside Tootie. He gently squeezes her arms, then studies her face.
He hit her all right. Someone did. I'm afraid I'll have to take a couple of stitches.
A cut glistens over Tootie's lip.
No bones broken, though.
He lifts up Tootie's hand to check her pulse, and she clenches her fist.
Come on, Tootie, open up. Let the doctor see.
Let's see. What is it? What? It's hair. And I don't think it's Tootie's.
I had to do it. He tried to kill me.
She must have had quite a struggle fighting him off. Most of it still has the roots on it.
Esther gapes and rushes out.
Well, let's see now. We better take her upstairs.
Yeah.
Help me. There we are.
Esther runs outside and down the front steps. Her long skirt swirls around her ankles as she dashes over to John's house and finds him on the porch.
Hello, Esther.
John Truett.
She punches him.
I've come here to ask you something.
Really?
Yes. What do you mean hitting a five-year-old child?
She shoves him down.
Esther.
She shakes him.
The next time you want to hit somebody, pick on somebody your own size.
As he tries to restrain her swinging arm, she bites his hand.
Yes.
If there's anything I hate, loathe, despise, and abominate, it's a bully!
She stalks off, and John stares after her, befuddled. At the Smiths, Tootie lies in Esther's bed.
I'm going to sleep right here.
All right, of course you may, dear.
And I won't wear Esther's nightgown.
I'll get it for you right now.
I hate to think what your father's going to say when he hears about this. He may strike that Truett boy.
She unbuttons Tootie's shirt.
I'll do that, Mama.
All right, and I'll get you some ice cream and cake.
Rose helps Tootie put on Esther's nightgown.
I was born last night, dear mother. I was born the night before. But if you'll forgive me, mother.
Esther bursts
I'll
in.
I'll never get drunk anymore.
I got him. He didn't even have a chance to scratch me.
Your dress is torn.
Oh, that must have happened while he was trying to hold me off. I bit him.
I bit him, too.
Agnes runs in.
Oh, yeah, I saw the whole thing. You should have run when I didn't. You would have seen the whole thing, too.
What happened?
When I got loose from John, I ran back. There was a policeman and a great big crowd, and he was mad, let me tell you. Everyone in the trolley was mad.
Mad about what?
They'll go off the track.
You know, but the cable came off when the motorman put on the brakes so fast. What have you two been up to?
Nothing. It was that old dress we found. We stuffed it. It looked just like a body. A live body, too.
We put it on the track. We thought when the motorman put on the brakes, the streetcar would go off the track.
Agnes Smith, you're nothing less than a murderer. You might have killed dozens of people.
Oh, Rose, you're so stuck up.
Tootie, how did you get that lip?
Agnes and I put the lady on the track. When John Truett saw the streetcar and heard the bump, he dragged us up the alley and tried to make us stay in the woodshed so the policeman wouldn't get us. So policemen never pay attention to girls.
Tootie, you get out of that bed and take my nightgown off.
Oh, Wes, let her alone. After all, she was good about her lip and didn't cry.
You're not my sister.
You're the most deceitful, horrible, sinful little creature I ever saw. And I don't want to have anything to do with you again.
Well, and for those 2 cents, people very mad.
They were furious.
Wait, like Mortimer nearly had a fit.
You shouldn't laugh. There's nothing to laugh at.
Oh, terrible.
Merciful heavens, John.
Esther dashes out. Next door, John walks out onto his porch, touching his bruised forehead. Wearing a turtleneck under his suit jacket, he sits on the railing and stretches his stiff jaw. Esther hurries over.
John!
He holds a chair between them.
John, I've come to ask you something.
Oh?
I just found out that...
She looks at his face.
Oh, did I do that?
Uh-huh. And this...
He points to his ankle, elbow, and hand.
And this?
Oh, John, I'm terribly sorry if I hurt you.
Yeah, it's no worse than football practice. Except it's better with a girl. How's Tootie?
Oh, Tootie. She'll live.
I heard her crying.
I guess. So did everybody in St. Louis. John, it's awfully nice of you to accept my apology.
If you're not busy tomorrow night, could you beat me up again?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd better be getting home. It's getting late.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, good night.
Good night. Esther, would you mind helping me turn off the lights?
He steps close to her.
I'm afraid of mice.
All the lights are out.
Wouldn't take a minute to turn them on.
Well, wouldn't that be kind of wasting a minute?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it would.
Esther lingers on the porch, and John pulls her into a firm kiss. Blushing in his arm, she backs slowly away from him.
You know, you've got a mighty strong grip for a boy.
She turns to leave, then stops, smiling into space. Her dreamy gaze drifts away, and she follows it off the porch. Next door, Mrs. Smith carries Tootie into the dining room.
Here comes the invalid.
She sits in Grandpa's lap.
I have to have 2 kinds of ice cream. I'm recuperating.
If I ever catch you fibbing again like you did about John Truett, I'll give you something to recuperate about.
They look up as Esther glides into the room. Gazing dreamily into space, she leans against a chair and smiles. With parted lips, she steps over to the table as though walking on air. Rose grins at her enamored sister. Mrs. Smith furrows her brow.
Esther, your ice cream is melting.
Isn't it?
Esther, is there anything wrong with you?
Yes, Mama.
Esther picks up a bowl of ice cream and smiles whimsically. Across the table, Agnes nudges Tootie.
Rose is a red, John's name is Truett, Esther's in love, and we always knew it.
Mom, I refuse to stay here while my sister's humiliated by these ghastly children.
They're your sisters, too. I'll stop at you two, or up you go.
Truett, knew it. That's pretty good. I can't think of any word that rhymes with colonel, unless it's infernal.
I must say, it's very difficult for a person to have any private life in this family.
Katie enters and picks up her ice cream.
Well, another Halloween. We're all a year older.
This where the Smith family lives?
Hello, Pop. I almost got killed. We stopped the trolley and I lost my tooth. And Mr. Bitchon's with the doctor gave me 2 stitches and I didn't cry once.
What's this, Anna?
Don't pay attention to her, Lonnie. She fell and cut her lip. She's fine.
That's a brave little girl.
He gives his wife a gift.
Sweets to the sweet.
Louis, Sherry.
Why, Lonnie, what a lovely buck. Is anything wrong?
Just because I bring you a present, you think I've been up to something. Well, I have. Now, Anna, I have some good news. Don't fly up in the air. There's nothing to lose your head over.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm as cool as a cucumber, and you're shaking like I don't know what.
Well, I was going to tell you about this before, but I wanted to wait until it was definite. The firm is sending me to New York.
Is that all? Well, I think we can live without you for a while. Yeah,
they'll all be safe with me. I got 12 guns in my room.
You'll be back for Thanksgiving, Mr. Smith. We've ordered the turkey.
You don't understand. They're sending me to New York for good, to be head of the New York office of Fenton Rayburn and Company.
New York?
What?
New York.
I don't believe it. I simply don't believe it.
It's true. I'm to start the first of the year. We'll leave right after Christmas. I thought we'd all like to have Christmas in St. Louis.
I think I'll go pack. It'll take me at least a week to dig up all my dolls from the cemetery.
Come back here, you two. There'll be no packing as yet. There are a great many things to talk over, and I must say you two are being very cool about it.
Why, Anna, I thought you'd be overjoyed.
New York is a big city. Not that St. Louis isn't big, but it just doesn't seem very big out here where we live. And what will the children do?
It's the same as they do here. Go to school, play, have their friends over.
What friends?
Yes, what friends?
The friends they'll meet in school.
But I don't go to school.
You will someday. They'll take you in.
And Agnes just ready to be promoted, and Esther going to be a senior.
I've worked all my life to be a senior.
And Rose is to be graduated next year.
Graduation, that's the least. All the people I care about are in St. Louis.
And what about me and my life?
You can take that with you. It's all settled. We're moving to New York.
I must say you're being very calm about the way you pack us off, lock, stock, and barrel.
I've got the future to think about. The future for all of us. I've got to worry about where the money's coming from, with Lon in Princeton and Rose going to college.
Well, maybe Rose won't have to go to college. I mean, things are happening.
Yes,
tonight she met Colonel Dolly at Hunsinger's, and he was very smitten with her.
I'm sure he was, whoever he is, but next year she'll still want to go to college.
Money. I hate, loathe, despise, and abominate money.
You also spend it.
What about Katie and Grandpa and the chickens? Not that we have many left.
That's a minor detail we can discuss later.
So I'm a minor detail, am I?
Now you all know very well I was talking about the chickens.
Oh, of course. Never mind what happens to your family. At a time like this, talk about the chickens.
Mr. Smith clamps his mouth shut and stares out the window. Softening, he smiles at his family.
Now, I guess you're all a little excited. We'll talk this over calmly tomorrow. Well, hickory nut cake is only Katie can make it.
I can't move to New York. I just can't.
I'm taking my cat. Lady Babby goes wherever I go.
Where are you going to keep her? Cooped up in a tenement?
For pity's sakes, don't they have houses in New York?
Rich people have houses. People like us live in flats, hundreds of flats in one building.
I'd rather be poor if we could only stay here. I'd rather go with the orphans at the orphans' home.
And what about the World's Fair? Just when St. Louis was going to be the center of attraction of the entire universe.
We'll come back here to see the fair. Maybe. Katie, it's as light as a feather.
You can bake anything in that stove. They have little buck stoves in tenements.
Katie retreats to the kitchen.
Anna, how's this?
Oh, it's too much, Lonnie.
He holds out a tall wedge of cake, and she breaks off a small bite.
This is your favorite, too, Rose.
No, thank you, Papa. I'll have some later before bed.
Esther?
No, Papa. I had too much ice cream.
Grandpa, I guess you can handle this, huh?
Thanks.
Grandpa takes the plate and sets it on the table. Mr. Smith tries to keep up his smile.
I suppose you two are going to fight over the candy flower.
You can have the candy flower, Tootie. No, thank you, just the same. I'm starting a tunnel tomorrow from our garden right under the streetcar tracks and into Mrs. Middleton's terrace. Then while she's walking around her lonesome day, I'll grab her by the leg.
It'll take months.
And I'm not going till I'm finished.
Don't use that impudent tone to your father.
He's just stating a fact.
Agnes and Tootie mope out of the room.
Excuse me.
Esther and Rose follow, choking back tears. Their frowning father sits down with his cake, then brightens and looks over at Grandpa.
How about a game of cribbage?
Not tonight, Lonnie. I've got some things to do. Excuse me.
Grandpa leaves the room. Mr. Smith takes a bite of cake, then glances over at his wife, who gazes sullenly across the empty table.
Aren't you afraid to stay here alone with a criminal? Well, that's what I'm being treated like. After all, I'm trying to earn more money to give my grateful family everything they deserve. That's worse than murder. I'm wrecking everybody's life.
He sits in the living room and folds his arms. His wife brings over his cake.
Now, Lonnie, it's not as bad as that. If you think it's best for us to go away, why, that's what we'll do. Now, eat your cake, dearie.
She holds out his dessert plate. Unfolding his arms and uncrossing his legs, he takes it and she kisses him. Mr. Smith settles back in his chair and eats his dessert as his wife rests her hand on his shoulder. Wearing a white blouse with a flowing black skirt, she steps across the room and sits down at an upright piano. She stretches her hands, wiggling her fingers above the keys.
It's good to hear you play, Anna. It's been a long time. Whatever made you think of that?
Put it down in your key.
He wipes cake from his mustache and leans on the piano. Drifts downstairs.
A song of love beseeching. Just for you, my longing arms are reaching. Time goes by, but we.
Esther gives Tootie some cake. On a snowy day. A title on the heart-shaped photo mat trimmed with icicles and holly reads, Winter 1903. The photo comes to life and a horse-drawn sleigh passes by the Smith's front lawn where children go sledding. In front of his house, Lon hops out of another sleigh and makes a snowball as he trots around back. Katie hangs laundry out to dry while Rose, Esther, and Tootie make snow figures. One looks like a polar bear, another like a soldier, and another like a plump old lady wearing a fur stole, a feathered hat, and spectacles. Lon strolls over.
Well, what's so funny?
This one's named Lucille Ballard.
Tootie points to the plump snow lady.
Is it?
Lon hurls a snowball at the ground.
I suppose that was your idea.
Oh, Lon, you needn't get so touchy just because Lucille Ballard doesn't think you're good enough to take her to the dance tonight.
A girl has got a right to go to the dance with anyone she wants. I just didn't ask her soon enough.
Everyone knows she's just an Eastern snob.
I'll thank you to keep Miss Ballard's name out of this.
Oh, Lon, just because you had a few dates with her in New York is no reason to lose your sense of proportion.
Look who's talking. You're sulking just because Warren Sheffield didn't ask you to the dance.
That's not true. Rose turned down literally scads of dates. She could have had any man she wanted.
Except Warren Sheffield.
Everyone knows that Lucille Ballard is just throwing herself at Warren because of his father's money.
Ha! There's what I call real Christmas spirit. You two have spent this entire vacation at each other's throats. Alonzo Smith, did it ever occur to you that you might take your sister to the dance?
What?
Is there anything wrong with you going with your own brother?
And be the laughingstock of St. Louis?
Oh, thank you.
Katie's right. That solves all of our problems. And besides, it's so full of the spirit of Christmas.
I'll thank you to leave Christmas out of this.
Oh, Lon, it's our last Christmas dance in St. Louis, and it would be tragic if either of you missed it.
It's all right for you to talk. You have a date. A real one.
Rose, if I didn't have a date with John Truett, which I have, I'd be thrilled to go with my own brother.
Then that settles it.
Wait a minute. What's she got to do with this?
Well, if you two won't go with each other, I won't go either.
You ought to be ashamed wrecking your poor sister's evening.
Rose, I'd be willing and glad to.
You would, Lon?
Well, I was going to ask you anyhow, but I thought...
And you two will have the best time of anybody. You won't have to be polite to each other.
Later, Rose cinches Esther's corset.
It'll be all right. Now take a deep breath.
Esther hangs onto the bed as Rose hauls on the laces.
Oh! Now that was all right, wasn't it? It didn't hurt.
Rose ties off the laces, then admires Esther's shapely curves.
Oh, Esther does wonders for your figure.
Esther rolls her eyes.
I feel like the ossified woman in the sideshow.
You look grand. Simply elegant.
I feel elegant, but I can't breathe. No, please don't.
With tight breaths, Esther hobbles to a chair.
I think if I just can sit down for a minute.
She eases into a chair.
Rose, I don't think I can go through with it.
You've got to start sometime.
But
I went through the same thing last year, and if there ever was a time we definitely needed every ounce of allure, it's tonight. If we're going to wreck Lucille Ballard's evening, we've simply got to be a sensation.
Rose, don't you think I could be a sensation without the corset?
You're competing with an Eastern girl. I'll wager Lucille Ballard doesn't make a move without a corset.
Well, I certainly don't relish wearing this thing. But pride has come to the rescue. For tonight, I'll do anything.
It'll be worth it. If we can create a breathtaking effect, it'll be simple to monopolize all the worthwhile men.
Exactly. There are only going to be about 20 boys worth looking at anyway. We can certainly handle 20 men. I should hope. Can you handle 10?
Well, 7 or 8.
If you guarantee 8, I can have...
Esther stands.
I can handle the rest of them.
What about John Truett?
Oh, I'll devote myself to John. But in between times, I'm going to make my presence felt amongst the others.
Someone see at the back door.
Who?
Someone that looks like John Truett.
Oh.
Esther grabs her dressing gown and rushes out. Agnes sits in a rocking chair.
Rose, what'd you get me for Christmas?
You'll find out tomorrow.
I hope it's a hunting knife.
Downstairs, Esther opens the back door.
Hello, John. Come in.
Hello. Yes, I've got some bad news.
Your aunt in the hospital?
No, my tuxedo in the tailor's.
What about it?
Well, I was playing basketball, and when I got there, it was closed. The tailor's. Well,
can't you borrow one?
Well, everybody who's got one's going to the ball.
Well, what about your father's?
That was my father's.
Well, find the tailor and make him open the shop.
I know his name is Jones, but I don't know where he lives.
Oh, well, this is ghastly.
I'm sorry, yes. I wouldn't blame you if you never spoke to me again.
Oh, well, you didn't do it on purpose.
Well, I guess there's nothing else to say. Unless you want to do something else tonight.
No, thank you. I think I'll stay home and do some packing. You know, we're leaving St. Louis in a few days.
I know. And this is a fine going-away present I'm giving you for Christmas. I'll bet you really hate me.
Oh, no, John, I don't hate you. I just hate basketball.
She runs off, and John leaves, shaking his head. Upstairs, Esther slumps onto her bed and hides her tear-stained face.
Yes, darling, what is it? What's the matter?
Nothing. I just wish I were dead, that's all.
Did something happen with John?
He can't take me to the dance.
Why not?
His father's suit's locked up in the tailor's.
Oh, that's awful, you poor dear. But don't worry, I'll take the both of it.
You don't think I'm going to the smartest ball of the season with my own brother, do you?
Well, I like that. You wanted me to go with him.
Well, that was different. You didn't have a date.
Neither have you.
Well, I had one.
If Lon is good enough to take me, he's good enough for you. Besides, you have to go. I can't handle 20 men alone. I admit it.
One sister going with her brother has been done, but two sisters makes the whole family look ridiculous. I won't do it.
We'll see what Mama has to say about that.
Rose leaves, and Esther buries her face in a handkerchief.
Come in.
Grandpa.
You know, the man that built this house cheated your father. The walls were as thin as paper.
Esther nestles in his arms.
Oh, Grandpa.
No. You know, with your hair like this, you're the very image of your grandma. I remember the first dance I took her to, and her father told her she'd have to be home at 10 o'clock. And she was crying, just like you are now.
I'm sorry, I just... Well, you must think I'm an awful baby.
No, you go right ahead. It isn't often a pretty girl has a real legitimate reason to cry. The funny thing, I took my tuxedo out of mothballs yesterday. Looks pretty good, too. You know, suits are like men. They like to step out once in a while with a pretty dress. That suit of mine does the greatest one-step you ever saw.
Esther's glistening eyes flutter.
Grandpa, are you actually...
She throws her arms around him.
What's this I hear about your not going to the dance?
Who says I'm not going? Of course I'm going. With the handsomest man in town.
Grandpa bows.
I'll pick you up at 8.
Later, a light snow falls. Through the frosted window panes of a conservatory, we look past a sparkling Christmas tree into a ballroom, where formally dressed couples whirl around on the dance floor. The women hold the long skirts of their gowns in their left hands and their partner's hand in their right. Rose, dancing with a tall, handsome man, wears a flowing green dress and a pearl choker. Her red hair falls in ringlets over her shoulder. Rose flashes her partner a smile, then finds her sister in an elegant scarlet-red gown.
Have you got her dance card all filled out?
Practically. Clinton Badger, Hugo Borvis, Sidney Garcia.
Oh, as you mean. Everyone's a perfect horror.
She'll remember St. Louis.
Oh, look, there's Warren.
Warren helps his slender, blonde-haired date off with her coat.
That must be her. No, you go on. I have one more name to put.
Warren, a smooth-featured man with slicked-back hair, escorts his date over to Lon.
Hello, Lon.
Good evening, Lucille.
How are you, Warren?
Hello, old man. Good evening, sir.
Hello, Warren. Miss Dollard, may I present my grandfather?
Grandpapa Fader. Oh, you're one of my favorite people.
Thank you.
Lon has spent hours talking to me about you.
Well, I can understand any young man wanting to spend hours talking to you on any subject.
Oh, good evening.
Hello. Miss Ballard, may I present Miss Smith?
Oh, I'm so glad to know you. Is this Esther or Rose?
Oh, Esther will be along in a few minutes.
Ah, then this must be Rose.
Now, look, I'm going to take my life into my hands and say something. That is, if I can say it before Warren tries to strangle me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're all grown up. And if we'd only act that way, Warren would be here tonight with Rose instead of spending the evening talking about you and telling me that you're
all
the only...
Here.
Well, you're not going to deny it.
Warren takes Rose's arm.
No, I'm not.
Of course, that leaves Lon and me without partners, but otherwise it's a lovely arrangement.
I think we can work out that problem if we give it a little thought.
Well, we've got the whole evening to think about it. Hello. How are you, Warren?
Just fine, Esther. Miss Ballard, this is Esther Smith. Esther Lucille Ballard.
I've been very anxious to meet you.
Esther, thank you. We've been talking.
Yes, I wish I'd been here. Miss Ballard, I hope you don't mind, but we've taken the liberty of filling out your dance card for you.
Oh, thank you.
How considerate. I'm so thrilled about you coming to New York. I want you to promise to let me give you your first party. You will, won't you?
Esther, the plans have been changed. Lucille suggested that Lon and she pair off tonight and Warren and me. The plans have been changed.
Rose leaves with Warren.
Oh.
Grandpa joins Esther. She hides a folded card behind her back.
What's this about Miss Ballard's dance card?
Oh, I must have mislaid it. I better go and find it, though.
Try looking in your hand.
She reluctantly gives him the card, and he opens it up.
Clinton Badger. Hugo Borbett. Sidney Gorsey.
Grandpa gapes, and Esther nods, nervously rubbing her arm. Now Lon and Lucille smile at each other.
How about a dance?
Well, if you're on my card.
She turns to Esther.
May I have my card, please?
Is this Miss Ballard's card?
Well, let me see. No, I made a mistake and put your name on my card. That's yours. Thank you. This is mine. Well, Lon, you're down for the first dance.
Smiling at each other, they waltz away. Grandpa plants his hands on his hips and firmly eyes Esther.
Hello.
Hey, Miss Esther. Where's this Lulu Ballard you put me down for? I'm ready and willing.
Well, Clinton, there's been a mistake. And I'm taking all of her dances, if you don't mind.
Mind? I should say not.
Clinton, a heavy-set fellow, shorter than Esther, eagerly takes her in his arms. He twirls her awkwardly through the dancing couples. A smile lights up his face as he stares into Esther's eyes, then pumps her arm up and down like a piston. A queasy look sweeps across her face. Later, Esther dances with a gangly, bespectacled man. He bounces across the floor with quick, tiny steps, snapping Esther's neck back and forth as he gauchely spins her. Later still, a cloddish, slick-haired boy whips Esther around in a series of dizzying spins. He lifts his knees in high marching steps. Esther claps weakly and Grandpa comes over.
Pardon me, young man, but in the great country of China, when a stranger admires one of your possessions, it's common courtesy to offer it to him.
That's very interesting.
Yes. Well, I spent many years in China, and if you want to make me feel thoroughly at home, you might offer me your partner.
Huh?
Spoken like a gentleman.
Grandpa bows, then sweeps Esther away. They glide gently across the floor, sharing a smile.
Oh, Grandpa, you're the first human being I've danced with all evening.
You know, Esther, I wouldn't want this rumored about, but I'm pretty proud of you.
It's our last dance in St. Louis. I feel like I'm going to cry.
She buries her face in his shoulder. Grandpa's gaze flits across the room and he smiles broadly. In a series of smooth turns, he leads Esther out of the ballroom into a conservatory decorated with a Christmas tree. They disappear behind the sparkling branches. Then Esther reappears, dancing with John, who wears a tuxedo. Gazing fondly into each other's eyes, they float back into the ballroom. Cheek to cheek, they spin gracefully past Warren and Rose and Lon and Lucille. Later, outside, Esther leans against a tree, wiping her eyes. John presses a handkerchief into her palm, and she dabs away her tears. Standing on a blanket of snow, he tenderly strokes her shoulder.
I wouldn't have said it, Esther, if I thought it would make you cry.
I've imagined you saying it thousands of times. And I always planned exactly how I'd act. I never planned to cry.
Well, at least you didn't laugh.
Laugh?
I never asked a girl to marry me before. I guess maybe I was kind of...
John, no one could have done it more beautifully. I'm very proud.
Esther, will you? Will you, Esther?
Of course I will, John.
They share a joyful kiss. He gently rocks her in his arms, resting his face against her cheek.
Gosh, the time we've wasted. Say, do you realize I might have lost you? 3 more days, you'd have been gone.
Let's not even think about it.
You might never have seen each other again.
I kept telling myself that even if I did go away, we'd find some way to be together. But I never really believed it.
When you go to New York, it'll be with your husband. And your folks can show us the town, meet us at the station. Let's go in and tell them now.
Oh, no, not tonight. I mean, I'd rather just the two of us knew about it tonight.
Esther, you're not changing your... You do feel it's the right thing to do, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I don't have to be an engineer. College takes too long anyway. I can get a job right away and support you in style.
Of course you can, darling.
Now, we're not going to let them talk us out of it. After all, we are of age.
Esther faintly shakes her head.
Practically.
John, even if I did go to New York, we could still work something out somehow. Couldn't we?
Do you think so?
Esther's gaze drifts away. Fingering the soft lapels of his overcoat, she looks up at him. A beaded scarf sparkles over her auburn hair.
Merry Christmas, John.
Merry Christmas, Esther.
She presses into his embrace, and he holds her close. Tearing herself away, Esther runs toward her house. John's eyes glisten as he watches her go. Inside, Esther steps quietly upstairs. Wearing a cloak over her scarlet evening gown, she slips into her sister's room. Agnes sleeps while Tootie sits in the window, listening to a music box. Pale blue moonlight streams softly into the dark room.
Tootie, you bad girl, you should be asleep.
Did he come yet? I've been waiting such a long time. And I haven't seen a thing.
Did who come?
Santa Claus.
Now, you know he's not going to come until you're asleep.
How will he know how to find us next year? He's so used to coming here.
Oh, you can't fool him. He can find anybody he wants to find.
Esther wraps her cloak around her sister's shoulders. A light suddenly glows in the window and they peer outside. Next door, John stands in a bright room. He slowly pulls down the window shade.
If Santa Claus brings me any toys, I'm taking them with me. I'm taking all my dolls, the dead ones, too. I'm taking everything.
Of course you are. I'll help you pack them myself. You don't have to leave anything behind. Except your snow people, of course.
A golden light spills out a downstairs window, illuminating the snow figures.
We'd look pretty silly trying to get them on the train, wouldn't we?
Tootie stares sadly down at her snow people. Esther studies her sister's long face, then picks up the music box. On top of the box, two monkey figurines dressed in tutus hold instruments. Esther's rosy cheeks glow as she smiles down at Tootie.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, golden days of yore, faithful friends who were dear to us will be near to us once more. Someday soon we all will be together. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Tootie suddenly throws off Esther's cloak and dashes out of the room.
Tootie?
Esther follows and finds her father in the hall.
Tootie! What's wrong with Tootie?
I don't know, Papa.
Tootie runs outside into the backyard wearing only her nightgown. She takes the wooden rifle from her soldierly snowman, then lops off his head. With two more big swings, the soldier crumbles. Tootie beheads a top-hatted figure.
Tootie!
Running to the plump, bespectacled snow lady, Tootie chops off her head, then turns and smashes the polar bear into chunks. Esther runs over and wraps her cloak around Tootie. Their father watches out a window.
Why? It's all right. Don't cry. You can build other snow people in New York.
No, you can't. You can't do anything like you do in St. Louis.
Oh, no, darling, you're wrong. No, no, New York is a wonderful town. Look, everybody dreams about going there. But we're luckier than lots of families because we're really going.
Esther hugs her.
Wait till you see the fine home we're going to have. And the loads and loads of friends we'll make. Wonderful friends. But the main thing, Tootie, is that we're all going to be together. Just like we've always been. That's what really counts. We could be happy anywhere as long as we're together.
Esther chokes back tears as she squeezes her sister. Upstairs in Tootie's room, their father steps away from the window and closes it. He softly claps his hands and looks around at Tootie's packed things. With a heavy, brooding gaze, he takes a doll out of a box, glances at its red hair and long dress, then puts it back. Agnes sits up in bed, squinting through sleepy eyes.
What's the matter, Papa?
Nothing, dear.
The snow.
Nothing.
He tucks her in.
Everything's fine.
He strokes her hair, then steps out of the room, closing the door behind him. In the hall, he unbuttons his double-breasted suit jacket, takes out his pocket watch, and glances at the time. On his way downstairs, he pauses to look at the grandfather clock, wrapped protectively in newspaper. He continues downstairs, where wooden crates, pictures, and stacks of books wait to be shipped. With his hands sunk in his pants pockets, he strides into the living room as Esther brings her little sister inside. Esther holds her cloak around Tootie's shoulders and walks her upstairs. Mr. Smith sinks into an armchair. Resting his arms on his knees, he clasps his hands in thought. With a deep breath, he taps his knees, then settles back in the chair and takes a cigar from an inside pocket of his suit jacket. Propping the cigar between his lips, he strikes a wooden match on the sole of his shoe. He stops suddenly, and the match flame burns down, almost touching his fingers. His eyes flicker and he shakes out the match.
Anna! Anna!
He rushes across the room and turns up a lamp, then hurries to the bottom of the stairs.
Anna! Anna! Rose! Grandpa! Esther!
Bonnie, what is this?
What is it, Anna?
What's the trouble?
I'm coming, Anna. What are you? What's the matter?
What is it, Lon?
Eh? Go on over there. Sit down.
Say, what's happened?
Sit down, everybody. Over there.
Papa, what?
All of you.
His family sits down in the living room, and Mr. Smith paces in front of them with his hands firmly braced on his hips.
I've got a few words to say. We're not moving to New York, and I don't want to hear a word about it. We're going to stay right here. We're going to stay here till we rot.
We haven't rotted yet, Lonnie.
But what will you say to Mr. Fenton?
That I've changed my mind. I'm a junior partner of Fenton Rayburn Company, not a puppet on a string. And if they don't like it, well, that's just too bad.
They'll have to like it. But, Lonnie, you did think it was a fine opportunity, didn't you?
New York hasn't got a copyright on opportunity. Why, St. Louis is headed for a boom that'll make your head swim. This is a great town. The trouble with you people is you don't appreciate it because it's right here under your noses. The grass is always greener in somebody else's yard.
Warren bursts in the front door and removes his hat.
Rose Smith, we can't go on like this any longer. I've positively decided we are going to get married at the earliest opportunity, and I don't want to hear any arguments. That's final.
He points.
I love you. Merry Christmas.
Rose beams.
Merry Christmas.
She watches Warren stalk out.
Anna, who is that boy?
Now, Lonnie, he's a very fine young man. We'll talk about it later.
That young man's so excited, he's liable to leave on his honeymoon without Rose.
Rose, you handled the whole thing magnificently. He's just putty in your hand.
Rose, I hope you'll be very happy. I'd like to meet that boy sometime.
Rose is going to get married. Maybe she ought to open her presents now.
You little faker. It's your present you're after.
Good heavens, we've completely forgotten. It's Christmas.
They all hug each other.
Merry Christmas. Oh, Papa, you've given us the nicest Christmas present anybody could ask for.
This is the biggest Merry Christmas. Mrs. Smith steps away from her children with shining eyes. As they exchange gifts, she leans on a table and smiles thankfully. Her husband steps behind her and tenderly lays his hand over hers. With tear-choked breaths, she wraps her arms around him. The scene changes to a photo of the Smiths' three-story house, surrounded by a photo mat painted with bright roses. A title reads, Spring. The house comes to life as our view closes in on the front porch, where Esther, Agnes, and Tootie wait in the sunshine. They wear frilly white dresses and wide-brimmed sunbonnets. Rose comes outside in a similar outfit, carrying a parasol.
Oh, here's Warren!
Oh, Warren!
They all hurry toward the street as Warren and John pull up in a horse-drawn carriage. John climbs out and helps Esther into the back seat, then gives Rose a hand into the front seat beside Warren. Rose and Esther open up their parasols, and the carriage pulls away. Mrs. Smith comes out. Esther and Agnes run to meet their parents on the front walk. Another carriage waits at the curb.
I want to sit with the driver.
All right, Tootie. Up we go.
There we are.
All right, girls. Sit over there. Come for Grandpa.
Yeah, there's room enough. You just calm down.
All righty.
Where to, Mr. Smith?
You tell him, Tootie.
To the Louisiana Purchase Exposition.
Right you are.
Later at the World's Fair. An international crowd, including ladies and gentlemen in formal dress, sailors, and Scotsmen in kilts, mills around a lofty fountain. Agnes and Tootie munch on pink cotton candy as they pull Grandpa to where their parents wait with Lon and Lucille and Rose and Warren.
Stop eating that sponge sugar.
You spoil your dinner.
Papa, we saw the Gallatin flood. Big waves came up and flooded the whole city. And when the water went back, it was all muddy and horrible, full of dead bodies.
Oh, Tootie.
Near a tall, stately building, Esther strolls the grounds with John. A smile warms her face.
Oh, isn't it breathtaking, John? I never dreamed anything could be so beautiful.
I liked it better when it was a swamp. There was just the two of us.
Esther! John!
Passing by two nuns and a pair of Arab men, they join Esther's family.
Hurry up, you two. We're starving.
Where is the French restaurant?
Well, we passed it. It's over there.
Oh, no, it's across the machinery hall.
Now,
let's not lose our heads. I know exactly where it is. Just follow me.
Across a glassy pool of water, golden lights illuminate a majestic palace. Domes and towers glimmer under the night sky. Mrs. Smith gazes in admiration.
There's never been anything like it in the whole world.
We don't have to come here on a train or stay in a hotel. It's right in our own hometown.
Grandpa, they'll never tear it down, will they?
Well, they'd better not.
I can't believe it. Right here where we live.
Esther squeezes John's hand and stares awestruck.
Right here in St. Louis.
Fade to black. A final title appears in a gilt frame. The End. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.